myself so I know where to edit stuff. One, two, three. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Life in the Wick podcast. I'm Tiffany Spaulding, and I'm here today with Deborah Bateman. And we are talking about Jordan Peterson's rule number 7, which, what is that, Deb?
Pursue what is meaningful, not expedient.
Excellent.
Oh, good.
So, Deb is a friend of mine from out at the ranch, which you guys have all heard about already. So, Deborah, tell us a little. I'm so excited that she agreed to do this. I mean, like, literally, I could have done this whole series with her. So tell us a little bit about yourself, risk blossoming, all that stuff.
A little bit about myself. I've been a banker my entire career, and I'm still a banker. I'm currently the vice chairman at National Bank of Arizona, but also I'm a coach and a facilitator. I, 5 years ago, decided that I wanted to give back and became a certified coach and have been doing a lot of branding coaching and transitional coaching over the last several years.
And what is risk blossoming?
Risk blossoming. When my husband and I got close to that retirement age, we kind of watched people that were going ahead of us. And I saw a lot of people sit down in their homes and watch Fox News or Hallmark, you know, and it was like, that's really not the life I want to live. I want to pursue a meaning and really make this part of my life something that is exciting, that I can explore, I can discover, I can continue to grow. And so not only did we chart a course for ourselves to do exactly that, but we've also have a blog out there for the single purpose of really hoping to inspire others to look for a meaning, a purpose in their lives and pursue it no matter what age that they're at.
And that is awesome. And so when this, I said, what rule do you want to do? And she said this one. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is the perfect rule, because it is important. And I think it's important at every phase of life.
Yeah. But it's unfortunate a lot of times when people retire, they think, oh, this is now retired.
I'm done.
And you know what? It's kind of like, you know what? This is the part of our lives that we get to design, we get to create, and we get to live the way we want to.
Yes. And the reason, as we're going to talk about here, that as you move into that empty nest or last quarter, whatever you're going to call it, that you do get to design your life is because you have sacrificed some things.
Well said.
Early on, right?
Absolutely.
So whether you're an empty nester or you're tuned into this because you're one of my son's 20-year-old friends, it is all appropriate and all at each part of your life getting you there.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, and being able.
You could almost look at life with various chapters. And I think each chapter brings a new opportunity to define yourself,
right,
or to make some adjustments.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe get new meaning.
Absolutely. Right?
So in this chapter, pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. Basically, Jordan Peterson is talking about making choices now that are going to be good for you, your family, your career, whatever in the future. So there's some key standouts. So we kind of have done this before. So Deborah, what were your standouts in this?
Well, I think the whole successful sacrifice, and it's the power of what he talks about of sacrifice. And I think one of the things that really impacted me was really his words, if the world you're seeing is not the world you want, it's time to examine your values. It's time to rid yourself of your current presuppositions. Sorry about that. And it's time to, in essence, let go. And so, I mean, this chapter is such a catalyst for looking inward and really wanting to understand not only who you are, not only the value that you can bring, but what that meaning in your life is.
Yes. Yeah. And defining it recognizing it and then moving on it, like
right,
moving forward with those things.
You know, he started back, I mean, really and truly, when he talked about sacrifice, he actually went back to the caveman, the hunter-gatherers. And he says, of course, when they had a kill, they killed a mammoth, you know, it was like, okay, let's eat all we can because we really don't know the next time we're going to have food, right. You know. So there was no, quote, sacrifice. There was no thought about what about tomorrow? What about next month? What about next winter? And I think that the whole idea has evolved with man. I mean, I think that today's society, we've gone from hopefully surviving into thriving. And therefore, our ability to make a sacrifice, put things away, you know, whether that's you're saving your 401k or right. I'm a banker, you know, or whatever.
So please open a 401k.
Exactly. those are the things that we can do now to ensure not only our livelihood going forward, but our ability to continue to give back to mankind.
To give back, to share, to give your life a little mm-hmm. bit more meaning that way as well. Absolutely. So you also said, which was interesting, you also highlighted that experiencing is following a blind impulse, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny because I picked that comment as well, right? The same.
Yeah.
So experience is the following of blind impulse. It's short-term gain.
Yep.
It's narrow and it's selfish.
Yep.
And one of the things, it's kind of hard to read this book. And then even like you said, like, okay, I read it and now I have, right? The read is hard.
Yeah, it's a challenging read. It's not I'm going to sit down by the pool and read this book.
No.
I think it's a book that it grabs you. And I mean, I found myself reading a page or two and then stopping and my mind was like, "Poh," and really going back and rereading it again to make sure that I absolutely understood what was going on. It, you know what? This read makes you think. In fact, it doesn't let you stop thinking.
Doesn't let you stop thinking, mm-mm. right? There's no relaxing no. paragraph in this, like every paragraph. But the important thing is these pieces that we've each pulled. So my really kind of focus, similar, delayed gratification. Mm. Something better might be attained in the future by giving up something of value in the present.
Absolutely.
Right? Those same thoughts that really, if you're going to move forward in life, you really have to think forward. I remember when my older son was in college, he took a class right here around ASU. And the teacher did an exercise where he said, "What would future London do?" And it was very impactful to him. And it sort of changed the way he thought about things going forward. And that's what this is, right?
It is.
Putting
absolutely.
Like what in the future. And he would even do these funny things, like he'd be home from school break or whatever, and he would do his dishes right away, which is something as a young person he never did. And I was like, "Well, London, since you moved into your own place, blah, blah, blah." He goes, "No, it's future London. If I don't do this now, future London is going to have to do the dishes."
Wow.
Right? So it's a tiny thing.
It is, but it's beautiful.
Right.
Boy.
And it's a forward motion, right?
Because it is.
It's the difference between thinking and
just surviving, yeah. just being.
Right. It's yeah. expedient yeah. to leave those things there. I don't have to take care of
it. Have you ever seen or heard of the exercise? When I was a freshman in college, we had a teacher that had us write our obituary.
No.
Yeah. And so you make the comments, who you were, what you did, and everything else. And I mean, in a way, it kind of plays back into here because he was really, I think, trying to get us to see ourselves in that
future
and the impact that we had made, the things that we had done.
I think that's an awesome mm-hmm. exercise. Matter of fact, I would challenge you if you're listening today, whether you are listening and reading the book and going along and doing the worksheets, or you're just listening, to take 5 minutes and write your obituary. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything lengthy, but it will definitely tell you if
how
you're
you
honest.
Lived. Yep. How you lived.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's awesome. I'm going to write that down on my little notes here because I think it's awesome. It's an awesome exercise. All right, so we know what the rule is, and we know it's good for us, right? We can understand that, but how do we, or why don't we, I guess is the question. Why don't we do it?
Well, I think it isn't as easy as it sounds. You know, I mean, and that's what, you know, I mean, even with me in a retirement mode, you know, where I've kind of taken the attitude, you know, I've worked hard all my life and now I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to smell the flowers. I'm going to, you know, just have a party. You know, I mean, I'm going to live my life the way I want to live. This book really made me stop and even think about that, because I think that it's one of those things, that there, it takes an enormous discipline, an enormous focus. And sometimes because we're afraid of hurting others, we're afraid of inconveniencing ourselves, or we are afraid of an other impact, we will take the easy way out, what is more, you know, expeditious for us to do. And I mean, this book will really stop you. And you cannot be lazy. You live a life that is intentional and is focused on your meaning.
Okay, lazy is a great word, right? It really, because you cannot be. You have to, if you can picture the life that you want, you can have it as long as you're willing to do the work.
Make the sacrifices.
Make the sacrifices. But it is hard. And I think you're right. There's a lot of, you know, we talked in the last podcast about social media. And when you look at social media, everybody's having this great life on Pinterest, right? But nobody, you're not seeing the hard work.
Nope.
Or if it's real either. And so that kind of clouds us and makes us like, well,
what's wrong with me?
Right. Like, yeah. Or she's got that life. I'm entitled. Yep. I should have it.
Absolutely.
And then you step back and you go, wow, she worked 60 hours a week for this much time, or somebody who got a promotion, or somebody who made the football team. If you're, you know, a younger high school, talking about high school parents, the people who do the work are the ones who
that'll reap the rewards.
Reap the rewards.
You know what? And I don't think you can compare yourself to others. I mean, you have to resist. You have to create your own standards, your own goals, your own values, and live by that. And that's part of what this is about. You know,
yes.
Really deciding who you are, what you want to do, the impact that you want to make, and knowing that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It's your job.
Yep.
It's your job to take care of yourself in that way. And I know we didn't talk about this, Deborah and I, before, but it's funny that she said that, because you know that the last rule we did is compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is.
Absolutely.
Today, right? And that's a key point here as well, that you really do. And I think there's also that, this weird thing in society, effectual to people who are older, this instant gratification that everybody expects everything now. Amazon now, Prime Video now. When we were kids, Christmas, I got gifts on my birthday and Christmas. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yep.
And you thought about them.
Yes,
right?
You did.
And you got the catalog, Sears catalog.
Oh, yeah.
And you studied it and you made a list and you revised your list. And it was a huge thing. And we learned to be patient and thoughtful and meticulous. And while technology has done some amazing things, I think it has made it easy, expeditious, to not have to be patient.
Well, we react to what we want.
Yes.
In today's society. I mean, a real quick story. Took my young grandson when he was probably about 4 years old to Target, and he saw a bike that he wanted, and he said, you know, Grandma, will you buy me that bike? And I said, honey, I just don't have that kind of money. I don't have that money. And he looked at me and he said, you've got a card, don't you? And it's like, yeah, I do. But, you know, so I mean,
right.
It's I think when we talk about this, I think it's one thing, especially for those that are parents or plan to be parents, it's raising kids where that instant gratification isn't so available that they have to earn it. I don't want to say want, need, but you know, so much of what we do, even, I mean, I go through the grocery store without a list, grabbing things off the shelf, throwing them in. But I mean, are we really responding to what we need or what we want?
Right. And I think that's especially true. And it's very hard, I guess, going back to why people don't do this. If you're a parent and you maybe you don't want your child to have something, or you don't think they should have something, or you can't afford that thing, all the societal influences make it very hard to say,
without a doubt,
right,
no.
To say, no, I'm the bad one. I had a little bit of this as my kids got older, and everybody else is doing it. Or so-and-so's parents let us do that at their house. And I'm like, well, I hate to quote your grandma, but I ain't them. Right. But it is the pressure of.
Absolutely.
And the fear, like with your kids, like, okay, if I don't let those kids do that at my house, are they not going to be his friend anymore? Are they not going to come over? And that
you don't want to impact them too.
Right.
No,
right.
Exactly. That's why I think when it gets down to that moment, you know, I mean, you not only think about yourself, but you're also thinking about those around you that you hold dear.
Right. And do you want that? And it's a hard, but you know what? Here's the other thing. All of this stuff, when you're standing at the door, having to go through, you're like, that is going to be miserable.
Yep.
And as soon as you go through the door and you come out the other side, you're like, that wasn't so bad.
I'm good.
And you feel like did it.
No, I'm on track. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, and I mean, we're talking at a high level about life, but you can take this down into a microism of really losing weight.
Right.
You know, I mean, here's a task that, you know, I want to lose 10 pounds, 15 pounds. I mean, it's like, that's my meaning. That's my focus. That's what I want to do right now. Now, I just was at lunch. They came and offered me a cookie and they said, would you like a cookie? And I said, I'd like a cookie, but...
No, were you at Los Cap?
Yes, I was.
Yes, you get free cookies there after lunch.
But I'm not going to have a cookie.
Right.
You know, and it's, I think that while we're talking about this at a very
macro
level.
Okay, just pause
level,
that thought.
All right.
How good did it feel to say, no, I'm not taking the cookie?
I was proud of myself. Now, I just started this diet, but you know what? It was like, you know, there's one.
But that's an important thing to keep in mind. As you start choosing meaning.
Totally.
It's a snowball of goodness.
It is. It is. I love that.
Mm-hmm. It's a snowball of goodness. Yes. So, okay. So we know what the standouts were and kind of what, why people don't do it. And I love this. So one of the things when I talk to somebody is come up with a list of how people can apply this in the real world. And so it was great. The way Deborah phrased her list was awesome. And I was like, I'm going to do my list this way. So anyway, okay, let's talk about it. How do people apply it in their life?
Well, you know what? I think, again, you can take it to the smallest level, you know, if you've got a task at hand. But I mean, when you asked me the question initially, I thought about the milestones that we have in our lives, you know, preparing for a career, you know, the things that we do, the sacrifices we make. And I mean, whether your career is a banker or a professional athlete, there's certain things that you've got to do to prepare for that career. There's a story in the book about the medical student. Oh. It says, you know, the individual that decides to go to medical school, you know, is going to have to sacrifice being a party animal, you know. And I mean, it can go on and on. I think choosing your life partner is really, I know that when you're, you know, 25 or 30 years old, you may not talk about these things, but you know what? I think to understand what each other's purpose, each other's goals, each other's meaning for life is a really important component of really sharing a life with somebody.
A successful life. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm going to backtrack on career also, just for a minute. Because sometimes we think, and we talked a little bit about this before, meaning has to be a great, big, juicy thing. Right? It doesn't. Meaning and putting meaning into your career as a medical student, as a banker, as a hairdresser, as an IT person, as somebody who works at the Ace Hardware store and does the best job
absolutely
ever because they love that work and dedicating whatever it is. And when you dedicate, so I had a friend who he was a bartender. And he was probably in his late 40s. And he said, it was so funny. This sounds weird, Tiffany, but what gives my life meaning is playing golf. I love to play golf. And I work as a bartender because it's at night and he worked in a great place where he made great money. And he said, and when I come in here and I take really good care of people and I'm committed and I do a great job, I feel great about the job that I'm doing and I make more money and I'm able to live the life that I want, which is get up early and go play golf. So it doesn't have to be.
No, you're going to save mankind.
Right. No. Doesn't have to be.
It just needs to be a good purpose. And yes. Good is relative to you.
To you. What gives your life meaning? Yeah. What makes you feel good in a good way?
Yep.
Right. We're not talking to any craziness here. Just. And what are you willing to dedicate yourself to and give up
to make that happen?
Sacrifice to make those things happen. Okay.
You know what? One of the milestones I did put on here too, and it really impacted me. There's a story in the book about Socrates. And Socrates obviously lived 2,500 years ago, and his dedication to his purpose and his meaning in life has absolutely lasted throughout the years. But he was actually put on trial and sentenced to death. And the story tells about how he was able to gracefully embrace his impending execution because he knew he had lived a good life with meaning and he had made a difference. Yes. And that touched my heart.
Well, and it's true, right? Mm-hmm. If you can face anything, there's an inner strength and an inner peace when you know that you're doing the right thing.
Correct.
Right? That you are creating meaning and not just for you, but for other people as well, hopefully, as your life,
yep,
as you get your act together, right? That you're able to provide for other people as well.
What about you? What milestones did you put down?
You know, financial planning, I'm a stickler about that. I know you're like, yes. You know, I didn't come from that background. I didn't. We had nothing when we were kids. Money wasn't something that anybody talked about. There wasn't anything to discuss. And so it was late for me. And I just feel like I'm constantly saying to the young people I come in contact with, put $20 in your 401k, just do it, and these tiny things. Well, my boys were raised that way also, right? Like I would incentivize them, like if you put this in your investment account, your birthday money. So here's what I would do. If you put some of your birthday money in your birthday account, I will match it. So
yep,
we'll say $50 of 100. I will match that 50%. If you put 100% of your birthday money in your investment account, I will triple it, right? Like it was this huge stretch of see the value of the more you put in,
yep,
the more you get. So I tried to, but financial planning is the difference between owning your life and somebody else owning your
life.
Right.
Or enjoying your life. I mean, especially, you know, when you hit that age, I mean, whether it's 65 or 50 or 40, when you get ready to retire, to know that you've got that nest egg and that if you need it, it's there is such a, it takes such a burden off.
It allows you
to live the life you design.
To choose.
Yeah.
You get to choose.
You have choices.
You get
absolutely
to choose. Absolutely. And so I think that's important. And I think some people think they're too old to start doing it, which mm-hmm is completely
never
untrue. Some people think they don't need to. They're too young to start doing it.
Never.
Right.
The power of compound interest, let me tell you.
I know it. So my older son's girlfriend, longtime girlfriend, Rena, who I adore, she is pretty good with saving money. And we were having this conversation and she said, well, you know, it's funny, like you have a little bit and then you have a little bit more and then you have a little bit more. And then all of a sudden you have like a big chunk. And then you think, I'm not spending that. That was really hard to get all that. And then you start saving more because you, it's the snowball of goodness.
It is the snowball of goodness. Absolutely.
Right.
And I think that really boils down to the bottom line is that, you know, when you can act on purpose, you know, when you can do the thing that provides the meaning,
right,
it opens up all kinds of opportunities for you.
And if you define yourself and what meaning you want in your life, making those choices, doing those small things becomes easier and easier.
Absolutely.
Because you have a goal in mind, a target of what you want and who you want to be.
Absolutely.
And then empty nest, which is kind of we talked about that as well. And then I think spiritual or religious, I put them as micros, depending on who you are.
Absolutely.
They could also be.
They can help drive your life. Exactly. Depending on what your beliefs are and everything else, I think. To be honest, in this particular chapter, there is a lot of reference back to the Christian Bible that really, I guess it's the Old Testament,
right.
So that really does help validate so many of his theories.
Well, and I think that's kind of an important thing. If you're just picking up the book or you haven't yet, Jordan Peterson really... Western society is based on Christian values, mm-hmm, and the stories that come from the Bible and why they work and all of that. So even if you're not religious, the platform of this is where it all came from is really, really important. And it's really, really important to understand just functioning in society.
Absolutely. And you and I talked about it earlier. I think that it would span. I think he could have used examples and stories from Buddhism or Hinduism or whatever faith it might be, and it would ring true the same way, because so many of these faiths are interlocked and share the same stories and values.
And values, right. Mm-hmm. So the premise of, you know, that foundation of choosing well and value and the things that you're valuing it all and work and sacrifice. Yeah. It's all kind of the same, like, I don't know, path.
You know, one of the things that I loved about here that really hit home, that I really embraced, was no excuses. That, you know, being honest with ourselves as to what we can do and not blaming others, but taking full accountability for your life. And I mean, there's a place where he actually says, you don't like your life, then you change it. And I think that is so profound, and I think it is so right on.
And it is the only, you are the only one who can. And people, when I talk to people about it, and they're like, oh, you don't understand, I have this. Everybody has that. Everybody has a that. And the difference is, are you choosing things that add meaning or things
that are just easy so you can move on to the next thing?
Right. And that is the bottom line.
That
I
is
think
the
here,
bottom
right?
line.
Like, pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient.
Perfect.
I know. All right, everybody. Anything you want to add? I want to talk about the monkey thing.
Oh, I love the monkey thing.
Okay.
Tell us.
So there's a story about how to catch a monkey, and sparing you all the other details, you put something in a jar with a small opening that a monkey can get his hand through. But once he grasps that thing, food, he can't get his hand out of the jar. And so he's stuck there and he gets trapped. Right? He gets whatever, the monkey trap or whatever he wants a monkey for. I don't know. But he's trapped because he is unwilling to let go of the thing he has right now.
He was not willing to make that sacrifice.
He was not willing to make the sacrifice. And so I want you, in wrapping it up, I want all of you to think about that monkey. What are you hanging on to?
Totally. That's holding you back, that it doesn't allow you to truly live that life that right. you want.
What can you let go of? Take your hand out of the jar and walk down the path towards a life that is meaningful.
Beautiful. Awesome. Absolutely well said.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in today. This is Deborah Bateman. Check her out on
riskblossoming.com.
Woo! So what we want you to do is risk. Oh, can you read that quote? Okay, this was such a nice quote. I usually read a couple things from the book. But
no, it's this is when I was reading, I mean, this quote just jumped out at me because I named my business Risk Blossoming to really encourage people to step out of their comfort zone and to really risk blossoming. So here is one of the ending quotes in this particular chapter. Meaning is what emerges beautifully and profoundly like a newly formed rosebud opening itself out of the nothingness into the light of the sun.
Perfect. And that is what you all are, rosebuds, getting ready to open up. Risk that blossom. Let go of whatever you're holding on to in the jar. Choose your meaning, set your course.
And just do it.
And just do it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Tiffany Spaulding, Deborah Bateman, so glad that you joined us today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. See y'all soon.